been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win.
You are listening to the Seattle Shrimp Tank, coming to you live every other week on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. from the Cornerstone Financial Strategies Studios. I'm Brad Berger, co-hosting with Dan Whedon, and you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes so you'll never miss an episode.
We're big time. We're on iTunes.
We are. So that's going to be exciting for people to be able to download and listen to us on the go.
Yeah, that's exactly what we like. So how you doing today, Brad?
I'm doing well, Dan. It's been a busy day, but we're here to have a lot of fun and be informative as well as inspire some entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Hey, I understand today is the vice presidential debate, and it's interesting. My take on these two guys, both of them, is they come across as somewhat vanilla. And my first thought was, I'm not sure I even want to watch this. Do you think that there's a good reason that entrepreneurs should be paying attention to this debate?
I do, but I don't think it's maybe for the reasons that you might think. I think this is a situation where they had to include them. Otherwise, it would seem a bit odd as to why they're even chosen as running mates. But what I really would be interested in is their perspective, if they get into it, on the impact that small businesses and entrepreneurs will have, perhaps as it relates to their policies. And I really hope they get into some meat with regard to what those policies are going to look like.
Well, you know, in the presidential debate, there was discussion in the first section about small businesses. And I was really glad to hear that. And I hope we hear a little bit from the vice presidential candidates, because quite frankly, they are a blink away from the presidency. And, you know, I know it's been 50 years since we've lost a president while they were in office, but you never know. And we need to know what these gentlemen are thinking about when it comes to small and medium-sized businesses in this country.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to go to an event last week, and there was a few statistics that I thought were really germane and why it's important and why I'm passionate about bringing this sort of a venue and our guests to the community. And these were some startling statistics. I'm just going to read them off real quickly and then we'll move on. But 30 million small businesses are registered in the USA compared to only 18,500 companies of 500 employers or more. That is a startling contrast between the number. Just under half of the country's private sector workforce is employed by small businesses. That's 120 million people. They are responsible for 2 out of every 3 net new jobs, and they contribute more to the local economies than the largest employers.
And that gets, you know, I think that gets overlooked, Brad. I'm doing some research for my new book, and those are the exact same numbers that I've found, and I think it gets overlooked. But you know what should not get overlooked?
Our guest
should, because he's one of those 30 million. Let's find out a little bit about him right now. Our guest today is Rusty George, and Rusty is principal of Rusty George Creative, which is one of the most revered branding and marketing agencies in the South Sound. So if you're not from this area, the South Sound is the Tacoma area. His firm's award-winning work for a variety of clients across many industries include the city of Tacoma, Labor Ready, the Humane Society of Tacoma Pierce County, Interstate Distributor Company, Northern Fish Products, and Totem Ocean Trailer Express. Now, Rusty and his staff are passionate about the successful growth and prosperity of their community and devote a sizable portion of their time to local causes. I think we have a couple questions for him on that later on. Because of his contributions and the quality of the work, he was named the 2008 Small Business Person of the Year, not just for the South Sound, but for the entire state of Washington. Very cool. Rusty George, welcome to the show.
I'm honored to be here, gentlemen, and talking about vice presidents around my house, I know exactly what it's like to be a vice president, so I can relate with those gentlemen.
Are you, maybe the first question is, are you winning these prestigious awards at home?
I'm certainly working on it.
Okay, good. Well, you know, it's interesting. Quite a resume, and marketing and branding is easily near the top of every small business owner's wish list for doing well. Tell me about how you got into this business.
Well, I was climbing the corporate ladder, and I got headhunted to actually come to this area from Seattle, and it was for a .com right around 2000, and it was really exciting, and we were on the verge of being the next Facebook, even though Facebook wasn't around yet. And we had put all this money into our stock options. We were so excited for this .com to go gangbusters. And then it went into the ground like a dart. And so they couldn't pay payroll, so they paid us in office furniture instead. I got a desk, a chair, and a computer, and I started my own design agency. And just as a result of that, all these people that were in this company, they got kind of thrown out like a cyclone. They kind of landed in various marketing positions around the South Sound. And they all knew me. They knew that I did good quality work and I was easy to work with and I wasn't a flake. And so my reputation just grew and I started acquiring more companies, more clients, more, bigger and better clients. And I hired an office manager to help me with the business and hired a designer to help me with the design and another person and another person. And we now are one of the largest agencies here in the local area, and we serve a variety of great clients. And we also do a lot of work for the community in the form of doing grants. We do one grant every year for a nonprofit. A 501c3 can submit an application for why they believe we should do their branding work over the course of the next year. And as a matter of fact, it's actually due at the end of October. You can go to our website, rustygeorge.com, and there's a place where they can submit an application. And then we pick one and we just do their entire brand from soup to nuts, everything from their initial brand to their website, to videos or whatever is necessary to elevate their communications and make them that much more successful.
Well, I'm gonna ask you a little bit more about that, Rusty. But during that conversation, a couple things popped in my mind. The first one I want to know is the .com that you work for. That was not the one with the sock puppet, was it?
No.
Okay.
They didn't even make it that far. Are you kidding?
They didn't even make it that far. So at least we know a bit of the success that that your outfit had.
They had the same amount of delusions of grandeur.
Fair enough. Well, there is a famous line that was touted and I was given credit by Paul Wanamaker. Paul Wanamaker, of course, was the considered to be the father of the department store. And it had to do with advertising and marketing and branding and those sorts of things. And that was, his comment was, half of the money that I spend on advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half. Mm-hmm. So do you come across business owners and as an entrepreneur who's in this space that have kind of this blank stare when it comes to budgets and the effectiveness of marketing and why they should do it and how they should go about it?
At the same time, Henry Ford once said, if I'd asked my customers what they had wanted, they would have said a faster horse. And it's a lot of dealing with people that don't really want to part with the money. Since the great stumble of 2008, everybody's a lot tighter with their money and they're a lot more cautious. And it's a matter of the fact is that it used to be that you would just buy a TV commercial, you would support that with a radio commercial and then some print advertising, and you would just be kind of trumpeting to one audience who would be sitting in front of a TV or reading the same newspapers. But these days, it's gotten way more complicated and way more there are hundreds and hundreds of different channels of getting out there, and you're not necessarily talking to one audience now. You're talking to all these different people who are on all these different channels, and they're all talking to each other. So it's extremely more complicated, and it's extremely harder to justify the spend, and it's harder to know where things are going. Like, there are more eyeballs on Snapchat in 1 week than the top 50 cable channels combined. And so it's a matter of like getting that and figuring it out, aligning with the goals of the client and what we believe are the best, most effective ways to get out there and give them an ROI.
So that's great. I was thinking of that exact ROI, return on investment. So what would you tell a small business owner as far as what kind of metrics should they be looking at in trying to determine that ROI?
Well, it's not necessarily, you don't want to step into metrics too fast. You want to actually come to the point of what are you trying to sell? What are your goals? Who is your audience? And really kind of distilling down that one way that you're going to be able to connect with that audience. And then figuring out what kind of channels you're going to get on there. Get on so that you can trumpet that message the most effective, the most surgically. ROI, the way that technology is involved as far as analytics and being able to look into your social media posts and the way that you're getting out there, seeing who's going there, seeing you can actually kind of distill down like people that drive trucks from age 30 to 35 who listen to NPR or something like that. And you know that you can actually get in there, you can buy that advertising and can be focused.
So I know that most small business owners I've dealt with usually think the bottom line ROI is increased revenue. And when they look at marketing as a part of sales, they think that way. Have you found that to be true in your business?
Yes. And I actually had a long time ago, a client who I convinced into doing a radio ad, and, you know, he spent a certain amount of money on having it produced and a certain amount of money actually buying the radio spots and stuff. And it actually went on a Sunday. The first advertisement came on at 1 o'clock and he called me at 2 o'clock saying, "Where's all my customers? They're not here yet." The one biggest thing that we always try to tell our clients is that you have to give it time. You have to be able to nurture it and have patience, especially in this day and age. It's not about just creating an ad in one newspaper and then everybody's going to see that. And within a week, you know, if there hasn't been any results, then it's a failure. It's a matter of kind of developing and evolving and nurturing and through these different channels.
And I'm sure that's one of the areas that you need to educate clients with, because I know many of us who spend money on those sorts of venues can have an expectation of somewhat immediate results. And I think that's largely driven by the society that we live in. But the question that I have is, and I believe you've answered it, but I'd like you to go in a little more detail. And that has to do with determining the platform or platforms that you're going to advertise on based upon your clients. Because clearly, different businesses have different demographics, or they have different clientele that they're looking at based upon what they do. In other words, you know, somebody who is selling widgets versus maybe selling a service, and that service may be a high level service. How do you help individuals with that?
Well, it's not a one, you know, everything that you can stick into, you know, one cookie cutter kind of solution. It always kind of depends on what their ambitions are and what they're looking to do. We went to a seminar once where I had a bunch of little millennials, and, you know, all respect to them and stuff. And they were talking about how they did this great Facebook campaign for REI, and they had millions of viewers and all these likes and all these shares, and it was so great. And I was the guy that wanted to stand up and say, "Well, that's because you're REI, for crying out loud, and you've had brand recognition before you guys were born. And it's not really fair to come out and say that you were, you know, this was such a great Facebook social media campaign. I mean, try one of my clients, like a chiropractic office in, you know, down there in Olympia, Washington, that, you know, doesn't have that kind of outreach." So it's very much, it has to be tailored to each individual's ambitions, their budgets, et cetera. And it really goes back to like starting with your brand and starting with what your core purpose is and the way that you're uniquely different from your competition. And maybe spending a little bit more time on that as opposed to the tactics and the, you know, the what you're offering, you know, kind of really distilling it down to the why you're different and why people want to come to you.
Excellent. Well, we're going to explore that in a little bit, but for now, we're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with our guest, Rusty George, for our hot or not section of the show, we're going to ask him this very question: how effective is tweeting at 3 a.m.? So don't walk away. We'll be right back with more of the Shrimp Tank.
The Seattle Shrimp Tank podcast is brought to you in part by Cornerstone Financial Strategies. Financial planning is a lot like owning a sports team. If there's no one coordinating the team members, each will do what they do best individually, but lose as a team. Why? No one knows what the other's game plan is. At Cornerstone Financial Strategies, we understand that people try to hire the best professionals, attorney, CPA, financial advisor, etc., each for their specific expertise, but often fail to have them communicate as one team with the same goal, your desires and values. That is why at Cornerstone Financial Strategies, we offer values-based comprehensive financial planning. And since money is not the most important thing in life, we ensure your custom-catered, personalized solution will take into consideration your most important goals aligned with your most deeply held values. For more information, visit us on the web at www.liveyouridealife.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC, Financial Planning and Investment Office, offered through Financial Advocates Investment Management, a registered investment advisor. DBA Cornerstone Financial Strategies, LLC, is a separate entity from LPL Financial.
Brad, I'm just wondering if Homeland Security gets involved in that at all.
Well, I don't know, but it's void where prohibited, whatever it is. And thank you, Executive Producer Amber, for reading that. That's a mouthful, and we certainly appreciate it as she goes through that. So welcome back to the Shrimp Tank, where we interview young entrepreneurs along with some of the brightest and best CEOs in Seattle. I'm Brad Berger, along with my esteemed co-host, Dan Whedon. And you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. We will be back in 2 weeks with another exciting guest. But for now, we wanted to get to our Hot or Not section. We really haven't gotten any background with regard to who is working behind the scenes at Rusty George. But this is a great question for that section, and that is, hire family members, hot or not?
They got to be invested, and you got to watch out for nepotism.
So maybe.
Maybe. It depends on the family member.
All right. Well, this rules is it's either hot or not. So there we go.
Well, my wife is my operations manager, and she's the one that keeps me in line. So I would say, in a very subjective angle, hot.
You just had you now have dinner tonight. You're going to be able to have dinner tonight. So hot or not, and this is aside from your chief operating or whatever, her personal relationships with employees, or is it only business?
Personally.
Yeah, do you have personal relationships, or do you think it's hot to have personal Boy, that didn't come out right at all. Hold on, let me rephrase
let's
this.
Let's define parameters
this.
Here.
You know, so how many employees do you have?
I have 10.
10 employees. Is it okay to talk about what happens on the weekend? Have a personal relationship, or should it be business only while at work?
I've been doing this long enough that I would say that it should be business only while you work. You don't want to get involved with the drama, with the, you know, little things. Of course, you want to ask, you know, how was your weekend? I make it a personal commitment to go around every morning and shake everyone's hand and look them in the eye and ask them how they're doing and kind of being a little silly saying, did you eat well? Did you have a good breakfast? Did you sleep well last night? And it's not phony. You know, I really want to know how they're doing and stuff like that, but it's also as a touch point. But you really don't want to get involved in, like, you know, the love life or, you know, how they're doing in that kind of situation, because that's kind of private. I didn't meet my wife at work or any of those scenarios that you've heard of before. No, we try to keep that. We try to keep it very separate. I mean, I'm from an advertising industry, and, you know, I don't drink anymore, but there was a time when we'd go through a bottle of vodka by 11 o'clock in the morning. So we were really brilliant in the morning and funny in the afternoon.
So it's not quite Mad Men over at Rusty George.
No, just not in the industry anymore, unfortunately.
You know, just a quick follow-up question. I know as businesses grow and you're up to 10 employees, it gets harder and harder to kind of create a culture around a workplace, and sometimes it's difficult to have that gray between personal and business. How do you, as the owner of the company, how do you keep track of that to make sure that the culture is staying the way you want it to?
Well, I mean, it's even a bigger conversation nationally in the fact that it is getting more and more difficult to find quality talent, find good people to work for you. There's plenty of people that want a job, but those people that are truly qualified and, you know, also, you know, have all the skills that are necessary. We do a lot of work in manufacturing and those kind of industries, and they're people, they're top talent, not necessarily the people punching the sheet metal, but the salespeople and the managers, they're getting poached. By companies, you know, that have climbing walls and big ball pits for their cubicles and all these kind of things, and also they can pay them well. So it's extremely important to have a good culture. And if you can't pay somebody at the level that these big, you know, monsters are able to pay them, you have to be able to make up for it in doing the little things that are going to retain them and make them feel like they're part of a bigger thing. And this can be everything from coffee cards, you know, that you give out just to recognize them for just doing small things to, you know, like saying, hey, you guys worked really hard last night until 1 o'clock in the morning, take Friday off. We also do summer hours where everybody leaves it, or we, one person in each one of the areas leaves at noon on Friday in order to go home and have some good quality work of good quality of life. You know, we do breakaways, and we, you know, went down and watched. There was a really famous glass blower at the glass museum, and so we all took the afternoon to go watch him, you know, perform, and it was really inspiring and fun. So that's an extremely important part of what we do, especially in advertising. It's not like, you know, some easy job like financial planning where you just come in there and you just kind of follow some numbers and stuff like that. Or be an accountant. It's just, you know, ones and zeros. I mean, they're all difficult, but you can go in any kind of a mood and you can do your job. In creativity, it's kind of like being a comedian. You always have to be on. You always have to be kind of thinking of the next thing. You always have to be creative. And that's not easy to do when, you know, you got a lot of challenges going on in life. So it's very, it's one of my main jobs, making sure that these people that I've hired that are smarter than me are also inspired and engaged and, you know, able to perform at the best they can do.
I think that those are some fantastic tips for anybody who's obviously running a successful business and how they treat their people. Russ, you are in an industry which I think has gone through a phenomenal amount of change, and I don't know if it's even a proper parallel, but one of the areas that has had to evolve that is somewhat related to your industry, and I don't know much about it like you don't know much about financial planning, but is the print space. You know, newspapers, magazines, et cetera, have largely had to change their business model. How has the evolution of the marketing, the advertising, the branding industry that you're in, how has that evolved over the last, say, 5 to 10 years?
Oh, 10 years. I mean, the amount of print that we do is like maybe 2% of what it used to be. And it's really, you know, printers have evolved, you know, since then. It's not necessarily that they're doing the huge CD-ROM cases that they used to do for the Microsofts and the Apples of the world, but they're doing a heck of a lot more packaging because people are buying things on Zulily or Honest Company or whatever, and instead of going to the grocery store, and they get in these big boxes, and inside these boxes, they have the brands that they're getting them from are continuing their relationship with the clients or with the customers by, you know, you open it up and there's some funny saying in there or whatever. So there's need for, you know, doing that printing on you know, the boxes that are coming into these people's homes. So it's not necessarily that print is dead. That's by no means. Print and direct mail and the tactile being able to get something in your mailbox is actually having a resurgence because everybody's trying e-blasts and, you know, they're forgetting about the fact that they can actually send out direct mail. There's ways that these mail houses are able to target people by their demographics, by their ages, by, you know, their interests and needs, and they can, you know, get them really down to just one neighborhood and or whatever. So it is a viable way that they can use data in order to, you know, hit people and reinforce their brand. But at the same time, print is one component in a way bigger kind of a campaign that needs needs to go out in order to have the awareness, in order to have, you know, some way of connecting with audiences. Things are so based on digital. We just, and things are always evolving. I mean, I actually was listening to the social media vice president of Patron, who, you know, they're very much into, you know, doing the whole digital engagement with the younger audience and trying to grow that whole brand of being like on par with cognacs and stuff like that, and not like Jose Cuervo tequila.
And how do you address that in your campaigns with your clients?
Well, I mean, what
the
I was
gonna, social media part. Yeah.
What I was going to say is that he was actually predicting that in the next 5 years, websites may be obsolete, that you may not even need websites. You can just, you know, it won't even be phones. Maybe it'll just be talking into your watch and saying, Siri, bring up in my, you know, HoloLens in front of me all the database I need about this client, or, you know, about how to, you know, get this certain kind of product. You won't even have to go to a website anymore. It will just be like something in some kind of a database that you'll be able to access with your, you know, with your voice. We just started getting into virtual reality. So you actually can, you know, put on the HoloLens or the Oculus Rift. And, you know, this is going to be in, you know, it's this complete anomaly right now that everybody's talking about. But in 5 years, that may be the way that everybody's going, that it may be augmented reality, that, you know, Google Glass may be, you know, evolved to where that you can just be walking down the street and you just say, hey, I'm interested in that. It'll put everything right in front of you and stuff.
Or riding in your autonomous vehicle.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, that I was going to ask a hot or not, but I have a better question for you.
Okay.
You know, I've been watching on TV, they have the new most interesting man in the world for Dos Equis. And he's a much younger version, and he's a little bit different, and they're doing kind of a cool takeout on him. But my thinking is that they are reaching out to a younger demographic, that they're going from a guy who is 77, mm-hmm. although kind of cool, they're going from a 77-year-old to a mid-30s or early 40s guy. So I guess maybe my question on hot or not is marketing to millennials.
It's so funny that the term millennials just kind of is interpreted as these kids these days. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's not necessarily marketing to this kind of audience. I mean, it's still marketing to, the people that you want to actually connect with. It's just the way of thinking, like if you have a website that's geared to an older audience, you want a lot more text because they're more apt to read. If it's a younger audience, you want just bullet points and you want to get really simple and you know, not dumbed down, but down to the lowest common denominator, because you know that they're just going to be skimming. And the way that you develop your website these days, it has to be mobile friendly. It has to be responsive. And because now the ratio is about 60% mobile to desktop, and that's, you know, catering to a younger audience. And like I said, if you're a small business and you want to be relevant to these people that are going to be coming up, you know, you have the older people that are going to be kind of, you know, stepping into, you know, stepping on, and, you know, there's going to be chasms to fill. You want to be sure that you have a messaging, a platform, a purpose that they're going to align with, so that they're going to feel like, you know, they're going to be part of something bigger. They're going to be contributing. They're not just going to be going to a job, but they're going to be actually looking on your site and looking for the information that says, hey, I want to be part of this tribe.
So the bottom line is that you have to know who your market is. You have to be very strategic and tactical about who exactly your market is.
And technology these days, if you get the right kind of software, if you get the right kind of, you know, resources, you're able to find out who those people are. And I'm
going to want to ask more about that. But right now we need to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back with our guest, Rusty George, for our Plead the Fifth section of the show, I'm going to ask this very question. And that is, how much traffic do you think I could get if I had you build my website?
The Seattle Shrimp Tank is partially sponsored by Toro Consulting Incorporated. Dan Whedon helps small and medium-sized business owners and entrepreneurs to grow, protect, and transfer the wealth of their business to create a better life for themselves. In nearly 30 years, he's worked with well over 300 businesses in all industries around the country to exponentially improve results around revenue generation, executive development, and resiliency that ensure ongoing and sustainable operations. Dan is one of a select few consultants in the world honored as a member of the Million Dollar Consulting Hall of Fame. He got there because he has helped improve the condition of so many entrepreneurs and their companies. If you'd like to know how he could do the same for you, call him. You'd be glad you did. Dan can be reached at 360-271-1592 and dan@danweeden.com.
Well, welcome back to the Shrimp Tank, where we interview young entrepreneurs along with some of the brightest and best CEOs in Seattle. I'm Brad Berger, along with my esteemed co-host, Dan Weeden. And you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And we will be back on October 18th with another guest. That is going to be an entirely different direction than what we're talking about today. But today we're here with Rusty George of Rusty George Creative, design, marketing, branding, advertising. And I really do want to get to my my question and the plead the fifth, and that is, how much traffic could you drive to my site if you built my website?
Millions of hits a day. I mean, it'd be like that one commercial, you know, where they're looking at it and it's like 15 hits, 300 hits. A million hits, and they're like, oh, crap, how are we ever going to, you know, keep up with this demand?
And what differentiates how you approach building a website to get those sorts of results versus perhaps the way that most people go about it?
Well, disclaimer, I was only being facetious. It's building websites, just like I've been talking about, has gotten way more complicated. It's evolved so much more. But then again, it's actually gotten better only in the last 3 years. That there's these parameters that you have to have. The main search engine out there is Google. I mean, hands down, it's like 95%, and God bless them, Bing, and Yahoo just got acquired, and you know, how much longer they got. So Google's the one that we're talking about. And their algorithms are always evolving, and they're always getting more and more sophisticated. And a person that that is still kind of holding on to technology of even, you know, 3 to 5 years ago, where they don't have a responsive website, where it doesn't automatically resize to, you know, tablet and desktop and then down to mobile, is losing lots of opportunities without the right kind of keywords, without the right kind of metadata, without the right kind of structure on their website, so that that the web crawlers, when they're going through, they go through about every 3 weeks, and they kind of look and they see where the relevant words are, and they say, oh, okay, well, this is a muffler shop, therefore we're going to put this, you know, if anybody ever, you know, searches for a muffler shop in this area or whatever, that it's going to go up high. And so all these kind of components go into it so that when these web crawlers come in and index, that it's got to look as attractive as possible, as quick as possible. And then you have all the other components of like the pay-per-click or the, you know, ways to boost it, and the inbound links, and you know, all these kind of other things that are necessary to do. It's constantly evolving kind of a thing. And if you're going to be working with a web design shop, and especially if you're working with a web design shop that automatically says, we're going to get you to number one on the Google rankings, I would run far, far away, because they're probably using some kind of black magic, some kind of, you know, baiting the system technology that's going to get caught by the Google Analytics, by the web crawlers really, really quickly, and it's going to start busting you down. You have to start with a genuine experience. You have to start with the right kind of keywords, and you have to position yourself as a thought leader, as a person that can talk about what you're selling, as opposed to just doing all these kind of black magic kind of ways that people are, these snake oil salesmen are
well,
kind of trying to
sell. Well, speaking of snake oil salesmen and black magic, I have another plead the fifth for you.
Okay.
What scares you the most being an entrepreneur?
Making payroll every 2 weeks. Isn't it everything? Isn't it everyone's? 2008, the great stumble, we have a saying, when the tide goes out, you realize who's been swimming naked. And in our industry, it was very much about, like, you know, people that were spending more money than they were making and kind of partying and not really paying attention to the bottom line. And, you know, cash flow is so important in being an entrepreneur. And it's very important with our clients as well. We want to make sure that we're spending every dime so that it's going to come back tenfold on them. You know, advertising doesn't cost money when it works, but it's got to be effective as well. And when we're working with our clients, we always kind of take our own perspective of, you know, having to be responsible for our money and being responsible for the people that we're paying and keeping the lights on, you know, keeping the lights on and everything like that.
So that's my next plead. The fifth question is, how many times have you had your electricity shut off?
None so far. Not good.
Yeah,
you got wood around here?
But that's a great segue for me to ask the real question that I'm interested in knowing is, what are some of the biggest challenges that you have faced as an entrepreneur, and how have you overcome them?
Well, I mean, again, you know, the great stumble of 2008, we were down. I had my accountant come in April of 2010. And she said, you basically have till the end of the month and you're done. You need to let everybody go, dismiss everyone and get a job, which it was not that easy back in 2010. But we stuck to our guns, and my wife, we kind of joke about her, but, she was working at another company, and, you know, she was like, why am I doing this when I'm, you know, just focused on, you know, your company? Because it's Rusty George Grave is very important to our lifestyle. So she ended up giving that, you know, guarantee of income up to come on board. And it was a very bold move on her part, and I salute her for it. But her and I working together figured out how to rebuild our book of business, how to rebuild the people that, you know, had left or who we had to let go, and, you know, specialize and get honed in, read a bunch of, you know, consulting books like Good to Great and all those kind of things, and learn those tactics in order to start being a successful business. And from that, what we've learned, we now kind of communicate it to our clients as well. And we use those same kind of theories and practices for their success.
So I got one more plead the fifth here.
Mm-hmm.
So if my dog and I, Captain Jack, he's the CEO of my organization. If Captain Jack and I were to start a business just like yours, how much money do you think we could make?
Well, that's the key. The more that you can specialize, the more that you can be a thought leader, the more you can charge a premium. The biggest problem, and I guess going back to Brad's question as well, the biggest challenge that I have is in our business, it's very much a commodity that you can get a logo online for $500 now. I mean, you can get a logo online for $50. You can get a website. They have all those little signs around the city saying you can get one for $899. Well, $899 barely covers our kickoff meeting, you know, and it's all relative that, yeah, you can get that, but what kind of quality are you getting? I mean, it's... in order to do the work that we have to pay good people good amounts of money in order to get real results. And when you're working with clients that don't understand the value of working with a thought leader, somebody that's actually got experience and is going to, you know, do a professional approach to marketing, you know, and building something correct so it's actually going to work, and they don't understand that and they just go cheap, you know, they're going to end up having to redo it and dealing with a lot of challenges. And so that's kind of a stigma of our industry. It's kind of like car salesmen. I mean, you know, you really think that they're basically trying to pull one over on you when it's not the case.
Yeah. So Rusty, we want to make sure that we give you plenty of time to talk a little bit about how people can get it in front of you. And we want to thank you so much for coming into the program today. It's hard to believe that that's how fast this goes, because there are so many other topics that I know that we could have talked about, and more questions that I have.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Yeah. Well, so for folks that want to get in touch with you and learn more about your company, how can they get more information?
We are on that World Wide Web, and we're at rustygeorge.com, and you can find us on all the social media channels that are necessary. Just email me, rusty@rustygeorge.com, if you have any other questions or follow-ups, and I promise not to stalk you for the next 10 years.
Fair enough. Our next show, October 18th, we will be here with our guest, Jim Chimperley. Now, there's a change in the time, so due to some scheduling, we will have Jim on our program at 1 p.m. instead of 4 p.m. Make sure you check out all the replays on seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. And remember, to become a shark, we all start out as shrimp. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank.
doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie keep going. You know the saying, you can reap what you're sowing. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.